Cafeteria and Fellowship as we're here reviewing the doctrine of idolatry rampant among the human race, Satan's counterfeit with respect to the truth of Bible doctrine. And we're finishing up here, Roman numeral 2, under the vocabulary, under the Greek words be. Our final word here in the list is icon. E-I-K-O-N. It means image, likeness, form, appearance. Generally, we look at icons like little statues. Christians like to wear their crosses, Star of David, things of that nature. These things, when they are placed in a position of exalting and worship in and of itself, or serve some other STA purpose for their being, obviously they become idols in and of themselves. In that sense, you don't see the pagan idols much anymore. Tattooing's taken over a lot of that. Drawing an image on one's temple, putting graffiti on one's body. You know, obviously, that can represent idolatry. Often people, what they put on their bodies is a symbol of what they believe, whom they worship, who they idolize. You know, put the old mother tattoo on there and you go, oh, what did I want to do that for? You know, or something like that. Obviously, if you got one, it's not that big of a deal, but just something for consideration in regards to one's future endeavors in life, that remember the witness of the life and why are we doing what we are doing. Romans 1:23, icons. People get all bent out of shape sometimes whenever I put doctrine in regards to certain things that they cherish. You know, you can't do that. That is just the idolatrous concept, principle, reigning in your mind when it comes to the truth of doctrine. You've got to be willing to jettison that kind of thinking and embrace the truth. Romans 1:23, exchange the glory of the incorruptible God for an image, icon, in the form of corruptible man, birds, and four-footed animals and crawling creatures. That's our word there. Revelation 13, 14 and 15. Chapter 13 has as its background context the rise of the Antichrist in verses 1 through 10, and then the false prophet in verses 11 through 18. The Antichrist comes up out of the sea, that's verse 1. That recognizes the Antichrist is a Gentile. False prophet comes from the earth. That is symbolic of the false prophet being Jewish in race. There's all kinds of conjectures, speculations regarding the Antichrist have been over centuries. We can tell you he's Gentile. We can tell you he's homosexual. We can tell you by John's revelation the fact that in John's time, he was. That means he existed before him. He was not. He did not exist during his time, and he will be. He will be resurrected from the dead, resuscitated from the dead, obviously, in his appearance. And we're also given world domains as a choice of his identity, of a ruler, the best that I've seen in regards to whom the Antichrist is Alexander the Great. He fits all the tickets and bills in regards to those prophecies concerning the Antichrist. The false prophet, that's a different story. Now, the Antichrist is not going to be resurrected until the rapture occurs. Those two events, the rapture and the resuscitation or resurrection, truly is a resurrection. His body comes back to life. Occurs fairly simultaneously. He will appear in Europe. He will be part of the block of the whole system that England is trying to exit from now, the European Union. There are only a certain number of nations that are numbered in regards to what we refer to as the revived Roman Empire. This takes frame of reference doctrines you have to go through to do this, but I'll just give you a rundown. The number of nations, I believe 13 if I remember correctly, somewhere in there. Obviously, there are more than that in the European Union today. But if you look and do your research, the original European Union, known as the Western European Union, has exactly the number of nations that are part of this bloc. So he will appear in that political environment. Great oratorist. People will gravitate towards him. He will prove that he is risen from the dead. The false prophet, again, is a little different story. That one's a little bit more elusive in regards to trying to put any type of specific identity on him. You'll hear all kinds of guesses in that respect. But what I'm trying to say with respect to the Antichrist, we know that he is resurrected. That's not said of the false prophet. So the false prophet could be alive today and simply biding his time. And he will, obviously, Satan is going to possess the Antichrist midway into the trib. He's going to impart powers to both of these individuals in their politicking and religiosizing of the world. They'll be able to do miracles, things of this nature. And people that look simply to the physical to validate their beliefs in life will be deceived completely. Their salvation, their only salvation, is the truth of Bible doctrine in this point in time. And the prophecies that are given, Christ has given, don't listen to any of these people. If it's not like a flash of lightning come from the east, then it's not the Antichrist. So if one just appears on the scene and then proclaims himself God, that's a false Messiah, a false Christ, Antichrist. But here, the false prophet, he basically is the sidekick of the Antichrist. He will speak for him on his behalf. He has superpowers, demonic powers that he will express. And idolatry is his game, as his intention to exalt Alexander as the Messiah and the Christ. Anyway, that's your background here to this. There's two beasts that come in here. The first beast, as I stated, Antichrist, verses 1 and 10. 11, I saw another beast coming up out of the earth. He had two horns like a lamb. So he has an image. He has a Christ-like image in his persona. Horns represent power, symbolic of power. And he spoke as a dragon, but what came out of his mouth was purely satanic. The dragon is symbolic of Satan. Even in the constellations, it's recognized that, the serpent, the dragon. In verse 12, and he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. It's like, I guess you would liken it to Jesus Christ in the forerunner, John the Baptist. John the Baptist represented Christ, but this is more as the tandem duo set up. And whatever the Antichrist proclaims, the false prophet communicates this. And he assures that it carries out, is carried out. And those in his presence, verse 12, and he makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose fatal wound was healed. Now this guy's going to be real instrumental in regards to the mark of the beast, the implementation of the necessary criteria in order to do trade, to carry on business in the world, the 666 image that's taught in the book of Revelation. He will have some type of pull and power, obviously in the field of technology. This is going to be done, much of this is going to be done through computer science. The very image that's set up of the Antichrist in the temple, holographics, or whatever, it could be some cyborg by the time we get there, who knows. He will look just as real in his image as he does in the flesh, but it will be a supercomputer setup, and it's like he's omniscient. They will know where you're at any given point in time. Oh, they already know how to do that? Yeah, come down here to, you name some little sandwich shop or whatever, and be a member of us. All we need to know is your name, address, and your email address. And next thing you know, they're locked into you. And you're talking about invasion of privacy. I remember one time, excuse me for straying here a little bit, and I really did not grasp at that point in time just how important it was. But I remember my dad, he's a hardcore conservative, went to buy some furniture, and I was with him, and he's going to take a loan for it. His credit was immaculate, no problem there whatsoever. He could have paid cash, but I want a loan. And they said, well, we need your social security number as we fill out these loan papers. He says, like hell you do. And I mean, he bought. And obviously, he was going to give the furniture to me and said, here, you can have my social security number. You know, how greed gets in your way. But, you know, when social security numbers were handed out in this country, it was a promise that they would never be used for anything other than with the IRS and your tax purposes. It was a private thing. Everybody has your social security number now. So, you know, we trust people that run our country, however much you trust them. But there I strayed. But, you know, it's just the whole system. The whole system. This is all in the workings. It is going gangbusters now. And eventually there will be a computerized system that will basically have tabs on almost everybody in the world, and people that try to avoid it, they will be hunted down. Many of them will be martyred. They'll have to go underground to do business. All these kinds of things are going to go on in our world before long. But anyway, we're on the way. But the false prophet, he's instrumental. He is the main pusher of this technology in regards to the Antichrist. And he performs great signs, verse 13, so that he even makes fire come down out of heaven to the earth in the presence of men. And that got me thinking. Maybe he has connections to certain types of satellites that are now all being privatized by people that has laser capabilities. Who knows? You know, it looks like a miracle. But anyway. Other than that, it will be a real miracle. It'll cause fire to come down out of heaven. And he deceives those, verse 14, who dwell on the earth. Where does deception come from? Because of the signs which it was given him to perform in the presence of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who had the wound of the sword and has come to life, proving himself as being resurrected. See, he's going to claim himself as Messiah. And the Bible teaches Messiah. It's all counterfeit. It's all counterfeit. See? So that's verse 14, the image to the beast, an icon. And the IT people of this world, the geniuses, whatever companies they represent, will construct this image that's going to be placed in the holy place, or most holy place, in the temple. And there was given to him, verse 15, to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast might even speak and cause as many who do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. A one world government, one world religion. It is the false millennium, the counterfeit millennium that they're saying, you know, that they are now, our world is now coming to. This whole new age movement that's been going on now for decades in our country. You know, it's now in philosophy coming to fruition. Now those hippies weren't all as crazy as you thought they were. See, the age of Aquarius or whatever songs they make about these things. But the reality is, the harsh reality is, if you're positive, you want to be a believer at this point in time and refuse to be a part of the image system, including the computer chips or whatever they end up putting in your forehead or your wrist, whatever, to keep tabs of you, then you are a target for martyrdom. Religious prisoners. And people think, well, that's not around anymore. This goes on in countries today all over the place. It's just the media is not going to slap it across the screen for you to look at, because that undoes their agenda. See, so our term icon. Not to finish that out, I'll let you simmer on that for a little bit. Revelation 4, verse 9. Now, during this period of time, and this period is exactly 7 years. The period of tribulation is divided in half. 3.5 years, 3.5 years. 42 months. 7 years. So that's one portion of history. While we can't tell you exactly how long the church age is going to be, we can tell you exactly how much more time the age of Israel has left to finish out its dispensational role. And that's 7 years. That's how long the tribulational period will be. But it'll be the longest damn 7 years this world will ever see, basically, until we get down to the end. Now, I can't tell you about the Battle of Gog and Magog at the end of the millennium after Christ rules for 1,000 years. The unbelievers are as many as the sands on the seashore on this world, because volition still resides, the SCA still resides, people are negative and refuse to believe, and there will be one final battle as Satan is released from hell, which he is incarcerated during the 1,000 years, so that he can't influence nations otherwise, and Christ has at least the pleasure of role without satanic interference. But just from the interference of the SCA and human viewpoint, will create another, if you will, global uprising in regards to the real political rule of Jesus Christ. And he'll wipe them out. We don't have a lot of information on that. But during the tribulational period, to get back to my point, if I can remember where I was at, people will be evangelized. Now, when we're raptured out of here, obviously every believer that's on this planet at the point of rapture is exiting, whether they want to or not. Whether they're a reversionist believer or whether they're a sound adjusted believer. Every believer will be removed from this planet. And all you will have left at that point in time then is unbelievers for this next segment of history. But it's not that God's going to let them go, positive volition go, uncared for during this time. Much evangelizing will occur on the planet during these 7 years. You have the two witnesses, which we've identified as Moses and Elijah. They will be resurrected. And you'll have the 144,000 male virgin Jews that go on positive volition during this period in time. I'm here to tell you, if I was a betting man, they're alive today. They're somewhere probably over in Israel today. And they will see the truth of the light, and they'll make a conversion. Then you have the two witnesses. They are able to do supernatural things. If they look at a country and say, a judgment comes upon you, you'll have no rain for the next 6 months, and you'll dry up. And all that. That's going to happen. People are going to hate these guys. In fact, midway into the trip, as we know, the Antichrist, under the feign as if he has his power over these people, whereas we know God controls all things, he will have them executed, beheaded, and everybody's going to have a party. This world's going to have a real party, a real world party, over getting rid of these guys that bring nothing but catastrophe and havoc in regard to our lives. They don't know. These people don't know evolution. This is not the way things go. You know, and whatever people are saying. And, of course, God's going to freak them out as they will, once again, be resurrected and their bodies will be reunited and they'll ascend into the air. You have all this proof, plus angels. Angels will become manifest, once again, in human history in a very big way. And they will ensure that everybody on this planet has a gospel hearing. But it's amazing how many people are going to continue to reject the truth and opt for the counterfeit? The dominant number of people. So, angelic evangelizing. You can just see one of the guys, he doesn't even need his loudspeaker. You know, attention. Now, their voice, they'll be able to broadcast this in a way that everybody will hear. And they'll give the warnings. They'll be giving the warnings to the people in the United States, and especially to the Jewish people. Come out of her, my people. Get away. Her time of demise is at hand. You know, we still have probably the biggest, largest population of Jewish people anywhere in the world in our nation. And if I was, again, I guess, man, most of them probably live in New York. Yeah. I don't know how many millions are still here, but they will have opportunity to get out. But if they don't, they don't. Oh, man. That'd be a movie I'd go see. I guarantee you, if somebody could put one together that's doctrinally accurate. But the angels will evangelize. And here's our reference to the verses here for icons. Revelation 14:9, another angel, a third one, followed them, saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast and his image, the warning, don't do it. Don't get that chip put in your wrist or your forehead or whatever laser, whatever they do. Because you go that direction, you have determined, based on the doctrine of volition, because people that take this image will not come to saving faith. The Bible makes that clear. I listen to people that try to come up with ways that somehow their volition can be manipulated. Well, it can be manipulated, but it can't be forced. And my psychoanalysis of that is it is a determination that they have already determined in their mind, and God reads it, that they wouldn't believe anyway. They come to a point in their life, they determine, I'm completely abandoning the truth in regards to the real Christ. And obviously, you have the delusion of the sin nature and all these other things as distraction and feeding their negative volition. I understand that. But anyway, worships the beast in his image and receives a mark on his forehead or upon his hand. So the warning, he will drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which mixed in full strength in the cup of his anger, and will be tormented with fire and brimstone in his presence of the holy angels, in the presence of the Lamb. That is nothing other than the lake of fire. Hell, if you will. And verse 11, and the smoke of their torment goes up forever and ever, and they will have no rest day and night. Those who worship the beast in his image, whoever receives the mark of his name. All right. through the language. Now let's get this real meat. Roman numeral 3. Things here that can comprise idolatry. Obviously, this is, again, not a complete list, but it gives you a good sense. First of all, inanimate objects, objects that don't have life, not living, such as wood, stone, metal, trees, rivers, mountains. Like the Native Americans and other societies have worshipped nature. Japan, people in the Orient, they're famous for this. Psalm 115, 4 through 8. You don't worship the creation, you worship the Creator. Here you have idolatry is contrasted with Yahweh. Not to us, O Yahweh, not to us, but to your name give glory. See, nothing, we don't take credit for anything. That's what not to us means. We do not take credit for anything of your creation. This is all you, God. That's humility. See, arrogance of man wants to say, well, I gave my 2 cents worth. I made my building in memoriam with this name on it, a big tower so everybody can remember forever until that 1 hour one day or whatever. But to your name give glory. Because of your loving kindness, because of your truth. And he cites the attributes, the assets of God that is the pinnacle of why he gets all the glory. His loyal love, the sacrifice of his son, loving kindness, the kesed in the Hebrew. His veracity, he can't lie. Verse 2, why should the nation say, where now is their God? Where now is their God? Verse 3, but our God is in the heavens. He does whatever he pleases. He is the architect. He is the creator. He is the potter. We are the clay. Whatever God pleases to do. And you've got to get beyond that fundy thinking that when things happen, that on the surface, it looks like, well, how could God do something like that? The only reason why you're saying that is because you don't know all the facts. God knows all the facts. People that on the surface, you may think, may look like they're perfectly innocent, but God knows what's in their hearts. They could be just as dark and black in their soul as anything, even though they put up a good facade in life otherwise. God has all the facts. He always has. He's known them from eternity past. Nothing catches God off guard. He's prefigured everything. Every possibility, every potential, every hypothetical that could imagine. That's the brain power of God. His intellectual power and ability to foresee and to know. That's who we serve, and he's alive. He does whatever he pleases. Verse 4, their idols, the nations, are silver and gold, money, wealth. See? And their idols represent that wealth. To have a 24-karat gold idol shows the wealth over someone that had his idol made out of matchsticks. See? The work of man's hands. They have mouths, but they cannot speak as they carve in images that gives them the semblance of being able to communicate. They have eyes, but they cannot see. They have ears, but they cannot hear. They have noses, but they cannot smell. They don't have true senses because they're inanimate objects. They have hands, but they cannot feel. They have feet, but they cannot walk. They cannot make a sound with their throat. Those who make them will become like them. Everyone who trusts in them. Nothing. You will become nothing other than someone experiencing torment for all eternity for the unbeliever. Psalm 135, 15 through 18. Similar kind of parallel here passage. Verse 8, he smote the firstborn of Egypt, looking back in regards to God manifesting his power in the plagues that he placed upon Egypt as under Moses and Aaron authority, going to the Pharaoh and releasing his people from captivity and showing his power, his omnipotence in regards to the Pharaoh. And all that did for the Pharaoh was harden his heart more and more each time. That's the nature of negative volition. God expresses his power, manifests himself, and for the negative person, it just makes him more stubbornly obstinate and hardened of heart in regards to God. Each time you reject the truth, understand this, each time you reject the truth, you form a piece of callous of skin over your soul. See? And you become hardened. That's why we exhort, don't reject the truth. You don't understand it finally. There's a lot of things I don't understand still. But you put it on the back burner. You pray about it. You don't reject it. Upon Pharaoh and all his servants. Verse 9, he sent signs and wonders to your midst, O Egypt. Upon Pharaoh and all his servants. And God took that situation that's in a bad way for the Pharaoh and the nation, but he turned it into a witness for himself, his own purposes, for the rest of the world around him to see what this Jewish people's God is all about. That's just cool stuff. He smote many nations, verse 10, and he slew mighty kings. Sihon, king of the Amorites, and Og, king of Bashan, and all the kingdoms of Canaan in the conquest generation. 12, and he gave their land as a heritage to Israel, his people. The only race known to man that God has promised and given land to. Without anything that they have done in and of themselves, apart from following God's will in the matter. As a promise under the Abrahamic covenant. Verse 13, your name, O Lord, is everlasting. Your remembrance, O Lord, O Yahweh, throughout all generations. For the Lord will judge his people, verse 14, and will have compassion on his servants. 15, the idols of the nations are but silver and gold, the work of man's hands. So all that the nations stand for under their practice of idolatry. So how'd that go for you? That's the Jews saying, you know, to these kings. Well, how's that going for you? As we possess your land now by God, you know. Isaiah 44, 9 through 20. Verse 9, those who fashion a graven image are all of them futile. It's worthless. It's a waste of time. It's vanity. And their precious things are of no profit, apart from whatever material value, obviously, that they might have. But in regards to the reality of what they believe these idols would bring about for them on their behalf. God's still in control of all that. You got to understand, yes, God has permissive will. He permits evil to happen. Satan prospers his own. But God, the fact that he permits it, states that he's still in control. Yes, you have my permission. You know, or I permit this to occur. So God's always in control, no matter whether it's one under his permissive will or whether it's under the more obvious directive, overruling, etc. Let's see. All the nations, 44, okay, I found it. Go back and forth. Those who fashion engraving, verse 9, are all of them futile, and their precious things are of no profit. Even their own witnesses fail to see or know, so that they will be put to shame. The things that their mysticism and these practices, etc., bring about, there's no real witness to it. Verse 10, who has fashioned a god or cast an idol to no profit? Who's been involved in that practice? See, it's a question. It's rhetorical. Behold, verse 11, all his companions will be put to shame, for the craftsmen themselves are mere men. Let them all assemble themselves. Let them stand up. Let them tremble. Let them together be put to shame. The reality is that they have pride in their work. But this is how God sees it. And this is their destiny that they are creating for themselves. They will be put to shame. They are completely out of touch with reality. That's negative volition. Negative volition is completely out of touch with God's reality, the reality of the human race. Running under a human viewpoint, running under negative volition, is simply living a dream of what the reality really is. What it ultimately will produce in regards to its outcome. Verse 12, the man shapes iron into a cutting tool and does his work over the coals, fashioning it with hammers and working it with his strong arm. He also gets hungry and his strength fails. He drinks no water and becomes weary. All dependent on human effort, human strength. But all the effort that goes into these things, all the effort that people put into their idolatrous practices, you know, like the groupies, the roadies in regards to the old rock and roll bands, what people will sacrifice just so they can travel with their band, you know, their idol. All the effort that goes into it. Spend half their life saving so that they can have a seat in a stadium somewhere when it's freezing cold and snow and watch their team lose time after time after time again. Their idols. Now you pick your team. Maybe it'll be different this year. I've heard that one before too. You know, the effort people will go to, but they won't give God time of day. They can't afford 4 hours out of the week to come and get in fellowship and listen to the truth of Bible doctrine and what God has to reveal to them. They're all preoccupied with their own agendas. A lot of it is emotionalism. To feel good. One way or the other, whether it's through religious practices or whether through it's just typical cosmic practices. Verse 13, in other shapes, and they'll do it until they're wore out. You know, like some of these stupid shows that try to prove themselves, like a Afraid and Naked show. You know, whoever came up with that? They put people out, and it's a male and a female, and they put them out together, naked, in some environment to see if they can survive for 14 days without anything. I always like it when they put them down someplace like South America. I said, I've been in that environment, and that's all you got? I had an M16 at least. I'll hunt my food. You know, what are they trying to prove? Their idol, for them, these types of people, often they are their own idol. I'm going to prove myself. Well, you know, it's one thing to excel in regards to a profession and things of this nature. That's just pure recklessness. What, for the money? So go out and die of hypothermia and see how much your money is going to cover your funeral expense. Another shapes wood, verse 13, extends a measuring line. He outlines it with red chalk. He works it with planes and outlines it with a compass. I mean, to be perfect and to be exact is the idea here. So that he truly represents his God, his image, his icon, in its most perfect form. And makes it like the form of a man, like the beauty of man, so that it may sit in a house, a statue. Of course, it's going to be a naked statue. A lot of that has to do with pornography. To me, it's amazing how one side of the cosmos mouth, they harp against pornography. On the other end, they call it great art. It depends, I guess, when you painted it or when you made the statue, carved it or whatever. Yeah. Whether right is wrong or whether wrong is right, people don't know up from down. They don't know Skubala from Shanawa. It's Greek to English there. Surely he cut cedars for himself to find the best wood. And a cedar is a prized wood. Especially the cedars of Lebanon. That was known around in the ages, at least in the past, how good a wood that was. And takes a cypress or an oak and raises it for himself among the trees of the forest. He plants a fir and the rain makes it grow. Then it becomes something for a man to burn, verse 15. So he takes one of them and warms himself. He makes him, he also makes a fire to make bread. He also makes a god and worships it. He makes it a graven image and falls down before it. And he uses all the natural creations of God for his own intents and purposes. The great majesty of these great cypress trees, cedar trees, oaks, etc. And what does he end up doing with it? Well, make a sacrifice or bake some bread or whatever, you know. Like it's nothing. Half of it burns in a fire. Verse 16, over his this half he eats meat as he roasts the roast and is satisfied. He also warms himself. Oh, I didn't finish verse 15, sorry. Middle of verse 15, he also makes a fire to bake bread. He also makes a god and worships it. He makes it a graven image and falls down before it. All these things designed for legitimate use, then he turns it and wants to twist it into, you know, the twisted thinking use. Half of it burns in the fire, verse 16, over this half he eats meat as he roasts a roast, and is satisfied, also warms himself, says, aha, I am warm, I have seen the fire. The rest of it he makes into a god. Verse 17, is a graven image. He falls down before it and worships. He also prays to it and says, deliver me, for you are my God. It looks at the inconsistency in regards to pagan belief. On one hand, the element is designed for man's use, for his purposes, to serve him in some way. But he takes it and he creates an image out of it and serves it. he also prays to it, verse 17, and says, deliver me, for you are my God. 18, they do not know, nor do they understand. For he has smeared over their eyes so they cannot see, and their hearts so they cannot comprehend. That's their soulish eyes because of their negative volition. They remain blind to the truth. That's part of God's judgment. You don't want to be positive to the truth, then your judgment is you'll remain negative and blind to it. And no one recalls, nor is there knowledge or understanding to say, I have burned half of it in the fire, and also have baked bread over its coals. I roast meat and eat it. Then I make the rest of it into an abomination. I fall down before a block of wood. Again, the hypocrisy, the stupidity, that don't bring up these logical conclusions in regards to what I'm doing here with the truth. I'm not going to listen to that because they're wrapped up in their own twisted mental attitude under negative volition and their human viewpoint. Don't try to tell me what's right here, even though you have all the evidence and can prove it. Even though you can pinpoint my hypocrisy. 20, he feeds on ashes, a deceived heart has turned to him aside, and he cannot deliver himself nor say, is there not a lie in my right hand? Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, to enlighten us to these things. In Jesus' name, amen.